Pints and Vibes Podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Tights and Bites Podcast. Tights and Bites.
I was watching NXT late last night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. I was getting ready to watch the match with glee, but all of a sudden it was forced on me. Commercial break, picture in picture commercial break. I
commercial
lost the match.
Break.
I couldn't pay attention to what was happening. Commercial break. They should just stop doing that.
Commercial break.
Fucking cut it out with the commercial breaks.
And unlike the Monster Mash, we actually do know what the commercial break sounds like because we got a whole bunch of them.
Whatever happened to a normal commercial break? Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm no Hal's Bard, Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by my fellow member of the Nation of Conversation, Julian Burrell in a Cell. Sausage party alert!
I think that finally does it, because I think I've used Hell in a Cell for every single one of you. So It was Hal in a Cell, then it was Danielle in a Cell, then it was Kelk in a Cell, and then, yeah, now here we are. I think Mike even probably got some variation of that at some point or another.
Mike Eagle in a Cell.
Eagle in a Cell. There you go.
Sure. Well, such hell. Much havoc. And that's not just 2020. It was the events from WWE this past week. Let's start with Sunday's Hell in a Cell, along with the fallout on Raw, which, of course, is really less about Hell in a Cell and much more about setting up the Raw Survivor Series team. Let's go to Sunday, though. Overall.
Yeah.
Overall, I actually thought that the three Hell in a Cell matches were all good to varying degrees.
Same, yeah.
But all at least very good. I think two of them were great. I preferred one over the other. We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
Not everything else was that good, but overall, it was one of the better pay-per-views I think that they've put out this year, which is a weird year for pay-per-views. What did you think?
Yeah, my usual barometer for a lot of WWE pay-per-views is just, do they at least have three good matches that are worth tuning in for? And I think we definitely got that. And they seemed like the three marquee matches, and everything else was at least, like, if nothing else, it felt like it furthered a story, with the maybe exception of Jeff Hardy and Elias, which is just kind of like, just seems like a thing that they're doing, which is, you know, whatever. Everybody needs stuff. Everybody needs work to do. But I thought that they all did a good job of being very different. And the only thing I maybe would have done organization-wise a little bit different was I probably would have put Bayley and Sasha last, because it seemed like they had, like, the most fun. But I mean, I guess it's your world title, so whatever. But not a huge, just a nitpick, but it is what it is.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. The opening match was Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. And to me, that is, maybe we're going to talk more about other Hell in the Cell matches during the main event, but, and I have my favorites, and I know that you do too.
Oh, yeah.
This one might be one of my favorite. It might be 1A of all the Hell in the Cell matches I've ever seen, just from a pure storytelling perspective. It was so well done. This entire storyline, the entire heel turn and run of Roman Reigns, I think has been A++++. And this match, whether it feels like the blow off to it, and it can't get any better, from the involvement of Jimmy to Jimmy's involvement in the finish to being crowned by Afa and Sika at the end as the actual tribal chief.
That was
just
so great.
Everything just so note perfect. I just, like, that to me was the most flawless match of the whole thing, and it made it really difficult for me to everything else that I saw in the Cell was trying to measure up to that story.
It was definitely the match I was looking forward to the most going into the pay-per-view, so I was really surprised to see it lead off. I was like, oh, okay.
And did it deliver for you? Because it's hard when you have expectations, and then that makes it easier to be let down.
Right. I think we're, even though it feels like, I feel like, you know, Roman's been a heel, like, for a little while now, I still feel like we're just getting started. And I think that they're doing a good job of so far is every time he's out there, they leave me going like, okay, but what's going to happen next? You know, like mm-hmm. Because I still, like, every time they keep adding new elements into it, I'm like, wait. So like, oh, Paul Heyman's his manager. Okay, what's going to happen next? Oh my gosh, wow. He's like, he's changed up his look completely and he's changed up his promo style. What's going to happen next? And now with this, I'm kind of wondering like, okay, now they're pretty clearly going to dig into the lore of like, how do we build up this family and how do we really stir up more drama by bringing in even more people? So I'm like, okay, so like, is Rikishi going to come back? Are we building to a big match against The Rock at WrestleMania somehow? Like, how are we going to like there are so many layers that they can do to this. So I'm glad that Vince listens to Roman because I feel like he's the, like Roman seems very like intent on making sure that this is a story that he can be really proud of. So I really don't want them to do something where it's like, and then we're going to blow it off at Survivor Series or something stupid like that. I'd rather just like, you know, like let's drag this out a little bit. And like, I one criticism I did hear, I've heard it from a few people, was that it was kind of slow. And I'm not saying that objectively that that's not correct, but I don't think I minded it that much because I feel like so few WWE matches ever work that slow. So few wrestling matches on TV in general work that slow. You know, it always feels like it feels like as the style of wrestling and in mainstream has kind of gotten faster and faster and faster. I like when a match doesn't even really have that many wrestling moves. If you really look at it, it's mostly just about like the story taking place in the context of wrestling. And then that's why I like how Roman's been talking a lot more in the middle of the match and he's been taking advantage of that. So I personally don't mind the slow pace. You know, everybody's mileage varies, but I think it works for the story personally.
Yeah. I mean, look, I would wager that the probability is high that people who thought it was too slow are very big fans of Ricochet Will Ospreay. Of that match, which I did. I liked it a lot, too. I thought it told a fine story. Mm-hmm. But that is like you want to have spot, something going on. Height and height.
Like that's they've always wrestled like that. So that's what you're going in for with them as well.
But in general, over time, each era to era, the action gets faster. That's just sort of what happens. If you look at matches from the 70s and 80s. They are slower than what we got in the 90s, which is slower than what we got in the 2000s, 2010s, and now into a new decade. At the same time, when everything that happens in a match means something, I think that the pace becomes a little bit less relevant.
Yeah.
So this was supposed to be methodical. This is supposed to be difficult for both characters who emotionally are pushed to their limits, but still love one another. The entire finish was so good because I wasn't 100% sure what was going to happen. I didn't think he was going to have a change of heart, but I didn't quite know how it was all going to work out, and I thought it played out so well because that's the only way he's going to get his cousin to quit.
Like
it's so well done from a story. I put it up there with the Ric Flair retirement match at WrestleMania in terms of this is such a well-told story, maybe even more so because we're getting character development out of it instead of having known quantities as part of it. I think you make a good point. I would love to see a match against The Rock. It certainly feels like that's what this is building to. And just the more development we get out of Roman Reigns, the better. It's so weird to think about a year or two ago talking about how awkward he was on the microphone. Because he was being fed all this stuff. Now he's, I don't want the live crowds back because I want to hear, I'm hanging on his every word in the middle of a match while he's talking. I just think it's fantastic.
I do keep wondering, like, how different would this feel if there were audiences there? Because I feel like there's nobody who's had matches hijacked more than Roman over the course of his WWE career. And I feel like anytime, maybe the slower pace wouldn't work with the live audience because maybe they wouldn't, I don't know, maybe, I know people generally seem to have turned around on Roman and seem to like really enjoy it, but maybe they wouldn't be giving him the emotional reaction that he wants in terms of like wanting everyone to like, you know, shut up and just like watch the show until your time to boo and cheer comes up. Like, I don't know, maybe, like, for now, I think it's worth enjoying just because it's, like, it's, I don't know if it would work if we didn't have these weird, bizarre circumstances that I've never seen from wrestling having to deal with before.
Yeah, it's true. It's, we'll never know. It's an impossible thing to figure out. The second of the three Hell in a Cell matches was Sasha Bailey. Again, innovative, super violent, very emotional, really, really well done. For what I just couldn't, I couldn't get as high on it as I could with Roman Reigns, just because that one came first. I feel like if they were flipped, it might have been the same thing, where it would have been hard to get as into the Roman and Jay match because the Sasha and Bailey was so good. But that said, it was a fantastic match that feels like it should be the blow off to that feud. I wonder if WWE will know when to walk away from a good thing and let it cool off before they heat it up again. What do you think?
I feel like this was what they were searching for with Sasha and Bailey for so long. You know, it was like, here, like, we wanted like a good tangible like turn from one of them that led to them having a really, really good match with the title at the heart of it. And I feel like they've gotten that at this point. So I'm not sure if they do want to mix them together again. I hope they at least find a new way to do it, because I was actually not on board with them renewing this feud when Bailey first turned heel and then Sasha kind of came along with her to get win the tag titles. I wasn't really on board for any of that, but they turned me around with it, because I think that they were all really, they really showed some commitment to it. They were all really entertaining as they were talking. So I'm, yeah. If they feel like they need to have another match somehow, and I guess we'll talk about this later, because Hell in a Cell used to be the end of a feud instead of just being another part of the feud, but whatever. I hope that they at least are thinking about, how do we do something different? How do we have say the Iron Woman match to the Sasha Bailey Brooklyn match, like where we bring in new elements and we try new things and we see what, like, are we talking about a loser goes to Raw type match, loser goes to NXT type match? Or are we talking like let's figure something out that can actually like move this along, rather than just feeling like an obligatory rematch for a title, because we don't have as many women in the title picture as we need right now.
Well, also, you're in a situation where Sasha winning the title makes total sense. That sort of puts a button, at least on this chapter of the story. But I wonder, where does that leave Bailey? Mm-hmm. Where does she go next? Because it felt like that was kind of wrapped up. Feels like most of this run has been wrapped up in being champion. I mean, she did it for over a year.
Yeah,
she's had that belt. So
I did just think of something they could do, because the knock on Sasha has always been, you can win the title, you can't keep the title. You know, she always loses it at the pay-per-view immediately following. So maybe that's like somehow how they figure this out. Like they actually say, like, you still have something to prove, because, you know, you keep losing the title every single time that you win it. So let's do this one more time, figure something out. That could be fun. I would be here for that.
You know, here's a stipulation that they never use, which is, if she loses the title, she can never challenge for it again. That's just a fresh idea that's never been used. Certainly not twice in a year by the same promotion.
Introduce the USA, or what channel are they on? Fox News Championship or something, and then
Fox News. Yeah, they're right on right after Bret Baier.
Yeah. It's the FS1 champion, Sasha Banks, coming out to the ring every single week. No, maybe they will do something like ridiculous like that they keep doing.
Yeah. And then the only ones to go on top of the cage were Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. Randy Orton getting an RKO, his 59th RKO, I think, of that match to get the win. I thought they both looked strong. I don't have a problem with Orton winning. Danielle is under the weather, which is why both Danielle and Lindsay are both recovering right now from separate things. So we can't check in on the official board, but I think it's been a long time since Randall's fucked up. I think we're still on that streak.
Yeah, I mean it. I feel like the easy knock here is like, oh, Randy Orton again. Like, you know, it's because I think that even WWE shared that graphic, because now Miz is Money in the Bank and Randy Orton is WWE Championship champion the same way he was. They both were 10 years ago, which is like cool, because that speaks to the longevity of their careers and how hard they work. But it's also like, really? Like, we're back here again? And maybe I would, I don't know, err on that side a little bit more if we didn't just wrap up Drew being a really, what I thought was a really good title reign for Drew. I think, like, when he came out on Raw and said, like, I will be WWE champion again, I promise you, and he kind of kept having he had a pretty good night overall to, like, keep reestablishing his character. I kind of saw it and said, I don't think this is a one-off for him. I really do think Drew will be champion again. Like in the, like, I don't feel like this was like a, I don't know, like a lifetime achievement award or a, like, let's see what happens. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work type of thing for him. I think he really, I think he did about as well as anybody expected him. And I think that WWE did a good job of like protecting him and not like getting him pinned for like a year and making him seem like a really good threat. And considering how quickly he went from afterthought to championship contender, I think that's kind of impressive. So I think I'm okay with Randy doing it because it does come off of him having such a good solid 8 months as being a new face in wrestling. So that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's he's still just getting started, even though he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And he's a complete package kind of guy. I do want to talk about Miz winning the Money in the Bank briefcase, which he won after Tucker turned on Otis. I feel like the Otis experiment might be over. The idea that he's definitely popular, and this is no knock, or I'm not expressing, as a journalist, I'm not expressing a feeling about it one way or another. Just it feels like they are saying, we made a mistake, we're going to punt and give it to Miz, who's
a guy who should have had it.
Yeah, the last, I'd say any time over the last 5 years, you could have given Miz that briefcase, as long as he's heel, and it would have worked. The guy consistently turns in really, really strong work, and I wouldn't mind seeing him as champ again. Now his window to cash in is small, but I think at a certain point you cannot have the money. I can't remember the last time it was successfully cashed in. Who cashed it in?
It was definitely one of the women. I know, didn't Bayley cash in successfully against Charlotte? Yeah. I don't think any of the women have failed to cash in, but the last time a guy successfully cashed it in, because Braun failed, Corbin failed, Brock.
Corbin
Brock,
it
was Brock.
It.
Of course, it was Brock.
That's right. Brock won it last year and then cashed it in. Yeah.
Right.
So, Lesnar with Rollins up top. And F5. And F5. Cover by Lesnar. Hook of the leg. Lesnar's the champion.
The Otis thing is always a little puzzling to me because I really do like Money in the Bank as just a concept and just as like a booking tool that WWE has had for like the last like decade or so. It's been probably even more than that at this point, but because it's always like either the tool to make new stars or the get out of jail free card whenever they book themselves into a corner and don't know what the fuck to do next. When Otis won it, I was actually very like, oh, this is different. Normally I just maybe this will be like a thing that can get him over the top. But with Otis, I just genuinely didn't see it. I thought it was like if you gave Scotty Too Hotty the briefcase or something. I was just like, all right, sure, good for you. But I don't know, like even if you win it, I'm not sure how on board with that I'm going to be other than just like, oh, nice. But but at the same time, I did feel kind of bad for him because I don't think this was the plan at all. Cause if it was, I feel like they would have done it forever ago. Like, I feel like at least Otis has a story. And I hope that Otis, like at least I hope he somehow gets some sort of opportunity and him and Tucker are actually fighting for like a title in addition to a personal feud right now. Like maybe they can like, who's the Intercontinental champion right now?
Sami Zayn.
Oh, who's the US champion again?
Bobby Lashley.
Oh, never mind. He's not going to fight over anything. Maybe the 24/7 title.
They can fight over the title to one of their cars. I got a Bronco.
Loser.
I'm putting it up.
We're going to have a tractor match right after this, Otis.
Yeah, we're just going to ram tractors into each other and go vroom, 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 like we're four. Yeah, I don't know. That's not what either of them sounds like, but it's fine.
I don't even know. What does Otis sound like?
He's
steaks and weights, baby. Yeah.
Come on, let's go. I got two tractors. Let's run them into each other.
Just him and JR yelling at each other is like, I want to see a skit of that happening right now.
Let me wear more masks or my beard shoots out of the bottom. Comedy gold. Let's move on to NXT.
Oh,
and we'll talk about Survivor. I think the Survivor Series stuff is better left for when things are
Christ,
a little bit
Survivor
more.
Survivor Series.
We don't have the teams yet fully. We're in like a no man's land right now. Let's talk about NXT, which had Halloween Havoc, the return. of Halloween Havoc complete with, I don't know. I almost put over, I'm going to put over something from AEW, but I almost put over Killian Dane as Shockmaster. Because that was so good. There were a lot of real. There's a lot to like about this. There's
I liked a lot Barrett to like. With the gavel, bringing the gavel back. That was pretty fun.
Yeah,
Matthews Barrett style. That was fun.
Yeah, that was. Yes, that was a. That was really nice to see the little Bad News Barrett return. Even the Haunted House of Terror, which, look, props to Cameron Grimes.
Oh my God.
And Dexter Lumis always doing his Dexter Lumis stuff. He's,
I thought,
he's great.
The only thing I really thought was stupid about that match was the part where Cameron Grimes walks into the shower and he's like, I didn't realize Cameron or that Dexter had a sister who I'm feeling kind of. I'm like, oh, really? We're, like...
Oh, what we got here? Oh, I didn't realize Lumis had a sister. I feel a little grimy myself. Go ahead and I'll move over and make room for Kevin Wright.
Yeah, that was a weird moment. And also for him getting undressed, he just took off his hat and his vest.
Well, I'm already in my underwear because I'm a wrestler for a living.
I'm going to bang you through my trunks. Hey, come on, let's go.
Oh, God, so bad.
There's so much mildew there. For sure you would catch something. Just keep it in your pants. But I mean, if you compare it to the only thing I'm willing to compare it to, which is the House of Horrors match.
House of Horrors match.
Which was a disaster. This one was way better, at least in terms of we're gonna make this a B movie. We're gonna have the zombie girl that crawls around Dexter Lumis. Yeah. We're filling the ring with cave into a zombie.
Also, it was only half as long. Like, that was really great.
It's nice and short. They broke it up. The cave into the zombie is definitely the best part.
He's just like all these, like, I could just tell all these people are like, all right, this is going to be good for my reel, right? At least something like all the yeah. people that, these poor zombies that were probably out of work because Universal Hollywood Horror Nights isn't happening. So at least they got to yeah. do something. So
exactly. The whole time he should have just been going, they're not allowed to touch me. They're not allowed to touch me. No matter what, they're not allowed to touch me. That's
I know
the
rules.
Yeah. So I like that. Rhea Ripley beating Raquel Gonzalez. That was a really great Hoss fight.
Props to Rhea Ripley, honestly, for continuing to be exciting despite the fact that she hasn't gotten that title back. I was a little mm-hmm. worried that they were just going to kind of shove her to the background, but she keeps having, if not title matches, marquee matches that are at least, like, you know, keeping her name out there. So I hope that continues for her. I really think she has a lot to offer, and I'm hopeful that they don't decide to kill her momentum as quickly this time whenever she gets another chance.
I think they have an actual women's division where you don't need a title to right. have a match, which yeah. is really, really nice. Raquel Gonzalez looked great. It was nice mm-hmm. to have Shotzi Blackheart as the host, even though it was kind of weird. Yeah. I don't like when people dress as a devil and they have, like, big, bushy, fake eyebrows. I don't know why it bothers me. It just is I'm not here for it. So it was really weird at the end. She's like, one final spin. Also, I love that there's no momentum to the wheel. It just stops. They were just like, well, we'll just stop. Couldn't cut away. Couldn't use a cutaway there. Some editing.
Got a guy in a ninja suit behind it. Just kind of like, is it there?
Yeah.
Okay, we got it.
They could have done a lot of things to make it work. But
yeah, imagine if they were just like backstage spinning the wheel and they had to just do a new take every single time. They spun. No, I wanted tables, ladders, chairs, and scares. Give me that match. Stop making it land on the pit of death match.
That was a great match, by the way. Tables, ladders, and scares. I loved yes. seeing Candice LeRae and Io Shirai close the show out. It was a fantastic match. I like each member of the power couple taking turns dressing up as Ghostface to help the other in their match.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed because it felt like this should have been a Candice win, especially after Johnny
really
won
so.
The U.S. title.
Right.
It seemed like they were going to do it. That was that felt like a good way to. I like that he put her up there, but then was taken away, so he didn't go. It wasn't like a James Ellsworth situation.
Right. Yeah.
I don't ever think it could have been between right. the two of them because they're heels and they cheat together. Mm-hmm. Like, they're kind of a package deal.
Yeah, but I thought it would have been fun if after they won, they did like a Jack Skellington and Sally thing, cause like and just and kissed on top of the ladder or something. Like that would have been cute.
Oh my goodness! First of all, I loved Johnny Gargano's gear, and that was a very good match with Damian Priest. It's nice to see him with the title again.
Mm-hmm.
But then when Candice came out dressed as Sally, it made I went, "Oh, yeah, they love each other and they coordinated their outfits." It's so cute.
It's Halloween. That's what you got to do, right?
Yeah, it's a couple outfit. It's a couple's outfit. Also, the other big news coming out of Halloween Havoc was Pete Dunne being aligned with Lurkin Birch and McAfee. After McAfee cuts a fire promo, he's doing a great, so far, no missteps. Clearly, like, he's a guy, he's an athlete. He's a former athlete, even if he was a punter or whatever the hell he did.
Right. Hey, the luckiest man in sports right there.
He's the luckiest man in sports. He obviously loves wrestling, like, deeply, and also gets it.
Yeah.
And gets how to come in and be a part of it. Stephen Amell was the same way, where he came in and outperformed all expectations. But Pat McAfee feels like a guy, like, hey, if they want to give him, if he's going to be like a Bobby the Brain Heenan, Paul Heyman kind of hybrid who can also wrestle sometimes.
Yeah, why not?
That's fine with me. I like the group that he's putting together. Pete Dunne looks like he went and chiseled himself out.
Right. I miss Pete Dunne a lot, actually. I really like, I thought he was a great presence on, like, a guy that they could bounce between NXT UK and NXT whenever they really wanted to. And he seemed like he could fit just about any role. I like Lorcan and Birch. I wish that Birch had waited longer than, like, a week before he revealed himself to be like a COVID truther on Twitter. But, you know, hey, I feel like if nothing else, they're still turning in decent work. Maybe Hurricane Helms can keep telling him to shut up on Twitter like he did this past week. But, you know, I think that they have a really good little War Games thing ready here. And I feel like Undisputed Era, this is kind of their lot in life, is they always have to be the War Games team right now. Because I feel like they have been for like the last like 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, maybe something like that. And even though I think that match is like a little weird in terms of like its pacing and in terms of its structure and in terms of like, I'm not like it's always like the pin doesn't count until all members of both teams are inside of the ring. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I have a hard time getting into everything else that's happening before that happens, because I feel like nobody can get pinned right now. So they're just beating each other up, which is okay. But I don't really know what I'm supposed to be hanging on right now. I'm not really sure what I'm looking for. So maybe they'll figure it out this time. They keep trying to retool it every single time they bring the match back. So maybe it'll work this time a little bit better.
I mean, when we went to see it live, it was very cool to be there. We got to see early Keith Lee in NXT.
Oh, remember live wrestling?
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, my goodness. But I do remember from where we were, which were actually good, would be good seats normally because of the two rings. I couldn't follow. The War Games for me did not work live at all. I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah.
On TV, some matches I think are built more for television. That is one of them. I think anything with a cage.
Right.
Even when the Punjabi prison match, when I went to, I was there live for that. I was like maybe 10 rows back on the floor.
Yeah. Hopefully the last Punjabi prison match ever. Yeah.
I have the chair. It's in Philadelphia in my father's basement.
You were going to say a piece of bamboo flew off and you have a piece of it in your house.
I have a piece
right
of bamboo. Well, Jinder Mahal lives with us. He's just crashing for a while. He said it's only going to be for another couple months. But, like, it was just hard to see what was going on inside. Now, television camera, they have all their angles planned out. So it's interesting to see how wrestling has transitioned from a live medium to a television medium and trying to strike that balance. On that note, I guess there was a report I saw today that said that WWE is selling as much, if not a little bit more, in merch than they were doing live shows, so that may be the death of their house shows.
Damn.
Because it costs a lot to do. I mean, it could be, because it costs them a lot to put on.
At least to scale back, maybe.
Exactly. You make what you make from ticket sales, right? And then the most money, I guess, they're going to make from merch. Mm-hmm. So if they can make the same from merch and lighten the schedule on their wrestlers.
Yeah, it'd be good for their schedule. I mean, like, working 300 days a year is just, like, not the business. And I'm going to put over something later that'll speak to that a little bit. But, yeah, it's just, I think that'd be fun in terms of like, because you always hear people from NXT, the thing that they like, even like aside from the energy feeling a little different when you go to Raw or SmackDown, they always say, I really loved being able to wake up in my house, go to work, go back to my house at the end of the day. Like at that, like, and that, in like when you get to do that for 3 years, that is a hard adjustment to go from that to now you're traveling every single day. It's like learning to crawl and then being told to run a marathon. It's just so yep. much. And I don't know. I feel like anything that they could do to lighten it up. And we've heard from people who have been on the show that like the house shows, even though they're like, you know, they're fun a lot of the times, and like even though WWE sells them as like a big thing, sometimes they have to cancel them because like they go to smaller towns, tickets don't sell that well, and they just like, what can you really do? It's like, why are, and people have are already getting ready to like, you know, fly out there, then they, and I don't know if they're going to cancel it, they're just going to put another town on the schedule where they think they can sell it, like mm-hmm. So it's just, it seems like a lot logistically, and I'd be interested in seeing if maybe that effort could be put somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to AEW. Speaking of limited schedules, the Young mm-hmm. Bucks have one shot to win the titles against FTR. They will never get a shot again at the titles. Who gives a shit?
It's
sorry.
Like the TNT tag team titles coming back, because yeah. that's what we do. We don't, bring a championship on board.
Don't pull that shit. Stop. It's already with Cody. It's enough. It's enough. Yeah. And he dyed his hair blonde again.
It's like he tried it on for 1 week and was like, nope, not, never mind. But I don't know. I don't like this. I'm sure FTR versus the Young Bucks, it's going to be a good match. They've been wanting yeah. to have this match forever. Like, they've been teasing it for years and years and years. And I just, even though I'm glad that they're doing some more stuff with the Bucks other than having them come out and wrestle a match and, like, mostly lose. I guess they've honestly been losing a whole lot. But it's just, this feels like, like, I don't know what's achieved by removing people from title pictures permanently. Because then it's like, just either you, like, am I really dealing with a situation where the Young Bucks aren't ever going to be in the title picture? Like, what does that achieve? Right. I don't get it. I even if, like, either they're lying and they're just going to, like, have them challenge for it again and it'll be fine because they're heels, or they're genuinely never going to wrestle for the title again. And I don't know why that's a good thing. Like, I feel like I'm going to be like, I'm not going to like this no matter what the outcome is.
It doesn't plus the match. We're already excited for it. We know right. it's going to be really, really good. But the titles gives it even higher stakes. You don't need to throw any more on top of it. There's right. no, at a certain point, it's like too many hats yeah. on top of hats yeah. where you go, you know, okay,
you know
great.
What this is? This is like when John Cena and CM Punk were wrestling for the WWE Championship at Money in the Bank in 2011. And the added stipulation that Vince McMahon said was that if CM Punk wins the title, John Cena will be fired. And everybody was like, fucking no, he's not going to be. Like, why did you do that? Like, and then, of course, the next week, that Monday right afterwards, they just said, Vince, you are not going to fire John Cena. It's like, well, duh. Like we already have a good story right here with the title at the center of it. Why are you throwing this little thing in the mix right here when it's like, we all know that that doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know. It's going to be a good match, so I'm going to choose to focus mostly on that, but this is just a weird thing that I don't like them doing at all.
Yeah. Now, it would be hard to discuss AEW without the hottest segment in all of pro wrestling podcasting, which is the women's division update. Now, without Lindsay or Danielle here, that responsibility falls to me. There was one match. Adam Page and Kenny Omega are on a collision course in the AEW World Title Tournament. Both had decent matches. I mean, Kenny Omega, main event, fantastic match.
Yep. Reductive also, entrances aside, this is fun to see Kenny come back like this. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it because I wanted to see Kenny as a more of a threat to the title for a while, and I'll take my shit with the sugar if I got to take that.
Also, Wardlow looked really good in his match with Adam Page.
Yeah, I think the guy can
wrestle.
How many buckshot lariats did it take to bring him down? Like, I think like two or three or something like that.
500.
Yeah, they're doing a good job of making him seem like a threat. And I think that's a good thing. He's got an interesting look that I think is different from everybody else, and he seems like a lot of fun.
But of course, the biggest news at AEW is the town hall they held.
That was great.
In which they tried to determine whether or not MJF should join the inner circle that led ultimately to the establishment of a match between MJF and Jericho. If MJF wins, he gets to join the inner circle. Eric Bischoff was part of this meeting. Do you want to play a clip of him?
Are well aware, I've worked with Mr. Jericho for many years, and I think most would agree with me that he is a prima donna.
Whoa, a prima donna? You know, I've never
Mr.
liked
Jericho,
him this.
Mr. Jericho, Mr. Bischoff has the floor.
He called me a prima donna, Tony. He's calling me names.
Mr. Jericho, shut up. Mr. Bischoff has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Schiavone.
You're welcome.
So there you go. Bischoff showing up. And then probably went right back to Wyoming or wherever his ranch is, where he lives.
To go complain about wrestling again.
Complain about wrestling. It's not like it used to be.
I do like this concept for a match, though. I really do. I think it's different to see somebody fighting in order to enter a group versus like, and if you lose, you've got to enter this group. And we're sure that's not going to backfire on us in some way to make you do something you really don't want to do. So I think this is a nice way of like, of keeping the inner circle stuff, because I really like, honestly, he would be like the I don't know, like maybe the one of the first people in the inner circle that I don't think have really gross politics or have said really disgusting things on podcasts. So I don't know about Santana and Ortiz, maybe they haven't either. So, but at worst he would be the third person who's done that. So.
I hope this is leading to a Jericho face turn and MJF taking over the inner circle.
Oh, that
feels like
good.
The only thing that makes sense. But
that would be good.
I'm happy to see it play out however it plays out, because they are both so good at what they do. And that's it's nice to enjoy that once in a while. If you have anything to say about what we've discussed so far, the conversation continues on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Discord. When we come back, it's time to talk more about that famous Hell in a Cell from years past. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal, and all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome.
All right, that's enough of that.
We got this.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Loveland. I'm joined today by
Julian Burrell.
This week, we're going to give one corner of wrestling some extra attention. This is our main event.
Let's get ready to
Whoa! Holy shit!
By the way, this segment, Hell in a Cell, is brought to you by Skittles. They can't match up their sponsors a little bit better? It's just whoever dishes out the money?
I don't know if you noticed, but the entire cell was actually made out of red Skittles.
That's what it was.
Just
taste the rainbow of pain. The pain bow. Taste the pain bow. Skittles. Fuck's sake.
I mean, you know, hey, Snickers, all the candy places are trying to clean up WWE, so we had to rely on Snickers to clean up that Mae Young thing from WrestleMania. So, Skittles, if you can maybe figure something out, help us out and hold Vince's feet to the fire.
I mean, to be fair, during the Attitude Era, everything was sponsored either by Lugs or 1-800-CALL-ATT, so I guess beggars can't be choosers.
Just dial down the middle, call CALLATT. It works so well. I still remember it to this day.
He's calling. Before it was just another WWE gimmick match, Hell in a Cell was considered the WWE gimmick match. It would often be the culmination of a white-hot feud and be one of the most brutal matches of the year. What are some of your favorites? Do you have a favorite of all time?
Oh,
or are there just some if I say Hell in a Cell to you, what match comes to mind right away? Doesn't have to be your favorite.
I have a lot. I feel like the one that gets replayed the most is Triple H versus Undertaker with Shawn Michaels as a special guest referee at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm.
The end of an era match.
Yes, I feel like the end of an era that didn't end nothing, but it was still a good match, and to me it was kind of like, I consider it the peak of the streak of the Undertaker as a streak. Like, I know he had the match with Punk and before it ended the year afterwards, but that to me was like, that was the end of the story that they had been telling since WrestleMania 25, and they actually took their time and told it over the course of like 1, 2, 3, 4 years or so. Like, I think it's a really good example of like them not climbing the cage all the time, which I think the Shane McMahon versus Undertaker Hell in a Cell match is a bad example of, in terms of just like, we don't really know what we're gonna do, just climb the cage and fall from it, like, you know. But then I go back, because I'm a child of the, I really started following wrestling on a week-to-week basis when the Ruthless Aggression era stuff was happening, and when Batista and Triple H kind of ended their feud in that Hell in a Cell match. And I go back to it because it's mostly because of the aftermath, and it's something that's really hard to find nowadays. Triple H and Batista actually met, it was after Batista had won. And Triple H just goes, like, Batista just walks up to him and they're both, like, super bloodied, and he just goes, it's over.
It's over. Damn right it's over. This is Evolution, baby. That's Evolution.
It was a real genuine passing of the torch moment where it felt like this match that was Triple H's for the longest time, because Triple H had never lost a Hell in a Cell match to that point. And it was like, he was like passing on like his moment of like, I gave it everything I had and I have nothing left to give. So I'm giving up on this feud. So I'm done. Like, I don't have anything more to give anymore after you beat me at my best place. So I go back to those types of things there, but there have been a lot of good ones, haven't there, over the years? What about you?
For sure. I just want to say, I think that idea of I've given everything I'm going to give, that gets lost. Mm-hmm. That's lost today. We don't see it as much. And that's why we have these matches after the Hell in a Cell, or why Hell in a Cell doesn't feel like the blow-off that it is anymore. The thing that comes to mind for me immediately is Mankind versus The Undertaker at Kingdom of the Ring 1998. Just because of those spots, I'd never seen anything like that before. It was also the first one I saw. I hadn't seen the one at Bad Blood, which was the premiere of Kane. I think the second, that was the second ever Hell in a Cell match. And then it became Mick Foley's match for a while before it became The Undertaker's again. His match against Triple H at No Way Out, where he put his career on the line and retired for 3 weeks before he came back to main event WrestleMania 2000.
I want to see Mick Foley kill himself every single, like whenever he goes into these things. And I think that was a little dangerous because it's sort of what Edge has always commented about what happened with the TLC matches, where it's like, you keep raising the bar, and it is just, you got to be careful when you keep raising the bar, because as a performer, you're feeling it. But it's like, at the same time, you got to understand, these people will accept nothing less than you killing yourself after you've done it so many times in a row.
Yeah, I mean, he set an expectation, and it took a while for everyone to break out of the idea that you didn't have to climb or be on top of the cage. The next Hell in the Cell that I remember really, really well was the Armageddon 6-man Hell in the Cell in 2000. That was Rikishi, The Rock, Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, and The Undertaker.
Was that the one where Rikishi fell on a giant truck full of whatever?
Mick Foley brought a truck. He backed a truck up to the cell to try to pull the door off, and then they made him go away. But of course, the flatbed truck was filled with hay, and Rikishi took a fall off of the top of the cage onto that flatbed truck.
Right onto the backed up truck.
I mean, I enjoyed that match for a lot of little moments in it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's not a top match for me. When I think of my favorite of all time, and this Reigns Uso match is up there, the other one is also an Uso match, which is the Usos versus the New Day. And again, for me, it's because of the story that was told inside. I like innovative spots. There are a lot of Hell in a Cell matches that I like, but that one in particular, where Xavier's on the outside and can't get in and has to watch the Usos torture the New Day, is that's like Such good storytelling.
I think Kofi might have been on the outside, and they trapped
Kofi
Xavier
was on the outside.
With the kendo sticks. Remember, they like trapped him in between the thing so he couldn't get out. I thought that was really clever. Like all that
so
kind of
good.
Stuff.
Yeah. I just, it was brilliant storytelling. I'm here for really, really good storytelling. That is more valuable to me than any high spot. So that is definitely a top one. So around 2000, of course, this is moving into 2007. There's really no blood anywhere.
Yep.
They start to remove it. So they're working for a younger audience.
I think
now,
it
Hell
was
in a Cell,
Edge versus Undertaker was the first Hell in a Cell match where they had this new rule of like, no, like tone it back. Cause like this was CTE was starting to be discovered and like no more chair shots to the head was starting to become a thing. It was real.
So now we're in an era, and I feel like today I didn't want blood. None of those matches felt like it needed blood. At the time, you're taking what's supposed to be their most brutal match and removing the thing that signals to an audience this is brutal, which is there's blood everywhere. Do you think that the loss of blood necessitates more dangerous spots in other ways because you feel a need to make up for the loss of the severity that brings?
I don't know about inherently dangerous spots, because actually, like, the other big change that I forgot about was they actually made the Cell taller.
Right.
They made it like it used to be. I think they made it about like 10 feet taller than it was originally in its original incarnation. So I don't know if it necessarily created a need to create more dangerous spots. I don't know if you would have. I personally thought we were never going to see people jump off the top of that thing ever again, and we've seen it a bunch at this point.
Right.
You know, I think like while those death-defying spots, they're all well and good, and I'm not gonna say it's like I'm sure the people that even did them were proud of them, because it's like you know, it's like a cool thing. There's like a little bit of like, I'm gonna like really take this to a limit that nobody else has ever done. What I always remember more are like the innovative things where they like try to find clever ways to like use the structure and like, let's lay the ladder across here. And like, it's like, you could see them like playing with like toys or something in the background and being like, what if we put the ladder here? We put the table over here. You jump from this ladder to this table and then you go here and there. That's the other thing. So it's like, I don't know. And not all of those are necessarily death defying either. I think that they're usually just like, oh, I've never seen kendo sticks used in that way. Or, oh, I've never seen the stairs used that way. Like, because at the end of the day, like, I always feel like you can only do so much, because it's like a wrestling match at the a chairs to the head. Like when Roman kicked the stairs into Jey Uso's head, that to me was just as brutal as like setting up three tables in the middle of the ring and just slamming him down in the middle of it like that. It's like you. It's at the end of the day, both one of these characters is trying to win. So there's only so many silly things you can do without like making sure that it still feels like it's a grounded wrestling match, you know?
Yeah, it's about impact, ultimately, not like.
Yes, not TNA. But
you don't have to turn it into an erector set. Well, don't tell JR. Do you think that there's anything left to really innovate in there? Because I've definitely gone through a lot of periods of time. Certainly before the Usos New Day match where I stopped looking forward to them. And it was never really as big a deal for me, Hell in a Cell. But I certainly look forward to it because it was a big event. Now, you know, you're getting at least three of them every time the pay-per-view comes up. And there's a pay-per-view named after it. So you know exactly when it's going to happen most of the time. Is there anything? I guess it's a two-part question. Do you still look forward to these matches? And do you think there's any new territory to mine?
Right. Well, more than anything, I do think having like the match on the calendar is a little weird. I do think it's because it was always supposed to feel, and I know like fake stories, they're planned out, they script these things out, blah blah blah, but it always felt more organic when you like let the story happen and it was like, okay, now at Bash at the Beach or whatever, we're going to have a Hell in a Cell match. It always felt like this is supposed, it like was supposed to come up like when the story had naturally reached a fever pitch. And now what happens is like, and it was always, there was only one. It wasn't like we need to have this many matches in order to justify having the Hell in a Cell at this thing. So it's just like, I feel like having it on the calendar and having a show named after it is kind of like, I think that's hurting it more so than like any like loss of blood or any sort of anything like that, because then it just it doesn't feel like those feuds feel earned. Like, I remember there were some, like, there was like a string of them where it was like Roman Reigns versus Rusev, and I'm like, did this really need to be in the cell? Like, why are we sure? Okay, whatever. But as far as, like, you know, innovative concepts go, I feel like I've been pleasantly surprised, and I feel like every time I think that there's something, that there's nothing left to do, they always do find new ways to do fun stuff, especially, like, now they're letting, like, you know, the women do Hell in a Cell matches, so we've already seen, like, that, like, on its face is, like, a pretty big innovation, even though I think, like, they had to rethink how they would do typical spots, because you saw that Sasha isn't heavy enough to break a table, right? So they had to find different ways to kind of, like, how do we, like, okay, how do we convey brutality, but doing it in a way that, like, doing it in a way that, like, makes more sense for what we bring to the table type of thing. I thought that we saw some pretty good examples of, like, people trying different takes on the cell concept just this past week. So I'm hopeful that every time, I'm hopeful that everybody's willing to stand on their predecessors' shoulders and keep finding and take it as a challenge. Because, you know, they're artists, and they, like, you can always find new ways to, like get past the handcuffs that WWE is trying to put on you and find new ways to do it in a cool way. So what, have you seen from it?
I again, like, every time I think it's used up, somebody comes in and does something different where I'm like, oh, I'm glad the match is still in use. And there is a balancing act. When you call it Hell in a Cell, people who love that match, you can guarantee that they're going to tune in because they want to see it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you lose the element of surprise, which I think is an important storytelling element that to have, especially pro wrestling. It doesn't matter whether it's everything's predetermined. Every movie you watch, every TV show you watch. And don't you enjoy it more when you don't know what's going to happen versus feeling like it's become predictable? So there's a and TV shows that last longer and longer either keep their trade-off of trying to surprise you or get caught in a loop where they know the stuff that works, and so that stuff keeps getting trotted out, and that's where you see shows where you go, oh, that's not as good as it used to be, because you've already seen that they're not giving you something new. So I think that there's a different kind of match that they need to bring in, or just use the Hell in the Cell more sparingly because it makes it feel more special. But ultimately, we're going to keep getting it, so it's going to be up to the people who are performing in there to make it to make it feel new each time.
Yeah. New colors. That's the answer. New colors on that cell.
That's put new colors on the cell. Hey, do you have any thoughts on what we've discussed? We want to hear from you. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Discord via the links in our show notes. We'll be back after this with some things from the wrestling world that you should know about. This is Tights and Fights.
Hi. Are you someone who thinks that when one door closes, another one opens?
Someone who always sees the light at the end of the tunnel?
If you answered yes to one or both of these questions, good for you.
We are not those people.
Nope. I'm Annabelle Gurwitch, and I'm a, you know, that other door opening? It probably leads to a broom closet kind of person.
And I'm Laura House. When I see a light at the end of a tunnel, I assume it's a train headed right toward me.
Laura and I have created a brand new podcast for people like us. It's called Tiny Victories. We're sharing personal tiny victories or things we've read or seen that inspire resilience.
So if you're looking for a tiny reason to get out of bed each week, subscribe to Tiny Victories.
Available on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get tiny.
Tights and Bites Podcast. Tights and Bites.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by
Julian Burrell.
This week we want to end the show by sharing some of the joy of wrestling with you. This is the three count. Julian.
Yes.
Before you put something over,
mm-hmm.
I know we're in a pandemic. We've all been at home, and it's hard for everyday life to resume in the way that we'd want it to. But I think one question I've had that probably a lot of people have is, what are you benching right now?
I can quantify this a little bit more now, actually. I don't know how many people are playing Ring Fit Adventure on their new Nintendo Switches, if they were able to get them. I'm at currently at level 175, 170 something or other. Uh-huh. So a whole lot of squeezing that ring, whole lot of eating better, because I'm like 90% vegetarian now. So we're going crazy right now in this crazy new time that we're living in.
So 175, it's probably like 5 pounds of bench per level, right?
Per level, yeah, at least. Yeah.
All right, good. Good to know. I just want everybody to I don't want everybody to think that we're slacking on our duties here. What would you like to put over?
I would like to put over something that came about from Paige earlier this week. So as everybody knows, WWE has taken people's, taken their workers and said, you guys are all well and good to keep twitching and keep going on YouTube, keep doing cameo stuff, but only under our umbrella, only when we let you, only when Daddy Vince gets a cut of everything. And I've been, I was very disappointed in it. I was hoping that, like, as more and more people kind of like raise the stink, that it would get them to back off a little bit. It forced them to kind of change their wording, if I remember correctly, but I still don't think it's great, and I'm kind of like not terribly optimistic for them to be able to like do things the way that they were and kind of be their own human beings, because independent contractors should be able to do whatever the fuck they want with their spare time and make money however they also want. And that all brings me to something that Paige had on Twitter, where it was like somebody had transcribed it, but she had the clip on her Twitch channel when she was streaming. She basically talks about how she broke her neck for WWE twice, and she was overworked as fuck, and she was constantly working hard for the company, and now she can't do the thing that she loves to do more than anything else in the world. If y'all saw her movie, you guys already know how important wrestling was to her, not just as like a thing that was to make money, but also as her way of creative expression and her way of like relating to her family, all that good stuff. So she basically talks about how since she lost her dream because she was like working so freaking hard for wrestling, Twitch has kind of been her way of like interacting with people and of like making it so that even though she's grateful to have a job, it's her way of like not feeling like she's just sitting on her ass doing nothing all the time and just going crazy like that. So it's her way to interact with her fans. It's her way to like kind of like have another performance aspect, because, you know, you're still talking, you're still making jokes, and you're still trying to be entertaining for people to watch you do whatever. And it kind of sucks that WWE's kind of trying to meddle around with that. And for her, it's like, after everything I gave this company, for them to try and take one more thing from me just doesn't seem fair.
I'm a fucking injured wrestler. I cannot wrestle anymore. I get used for media stuff sometimes. You know, but at the end of the day, I'm in my fucking house. I'm going fucking crazy, dude. I need something to keep me fucking sane, man. And Twitch was my escape from that.
It's pretty illuminating, and it's one of the things that I'm like, I know there's a million things going on right now, but if you're wondering why WWE wrestlers seem a little miffed that the company wants to stop them from doing this, this will be a good explanation for why.
I'm going to put over the lighter side of wrestling. This is from AEW's Town Hall, the Inner Circle's Town Hall, where the first question went to, oh my God, I just forgot his name.
Luchasaurus?
Luchasaurus. My God. Anyway, this is what he asked.
As a representative of dinosaurs and as a medieval historian, I understand the power of economics in creating change over time within societies. So, considering, MJF, that you do not have a master's degree, like myself, how can you contribute to the earning potential and ensure the continued financial prosperity of the Inner Circle?
Wow, everybody give it up for Luchasaurus, huh?
There's nothing like a well-measured and well-thought-out question to lead off.
From a dinosaur.
From a dinosaur with a master's degree. That does it for this episode of Tights and Fights. This week, your hosts were Julian Burrell, along with me, Hal Lublin. Don't forget to follow Danielle on social media, support all the stuff that she's doing, Honest Trailers, among many others. Buy Lindsay Kelk's books. For goodness sake, the woman is recovering right now. She's in recovery, and she needs your purchases of her books to feel
yes,
better.
It's a lot like of them are clapping on sale right now. Just take a look.
Yes. Also, I just did a show last night, which was Thursday night, with Welcome to Night Vale. That is available for the next month. It is a live stream of ghost stories. so you can get your tickets. I don't know. I assume you can purchase it now. Maybe you had to buy a ticket then, in which case, sorry you didn't see it. But Thrilling Adventure Hour is doing a Halloween Beyond Belief. That one you will be able to buy after it goes live, I know for sure. Nice. Check that out. Have a good time. If you're able to go and be there live, we're going to do a Q&A with fans after the show. I think that is only for people who come to see the stream, but I'm not sure. The only way you'll find out is to go get a ticket, and you can follow me at Hal Lublin on the social meds to get that info. Julian, anything you want to put over?
Nothing terribly important coming up. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Julian_Burrell if you want my usual mix of sports, video games, and, you know, lamenting the current state of the world. But I do my best to just talk about video games on there a lot, because a lot of you guys really seem to like whenever I talk about video games. So, yeah, if you want to talk to me more, just chat it up. Join the Discord as well, because if you join the Discord, you can play video games with me and everybody else that's on there. It's always a lot of fun.
That's right. By the way, Julian also doesn't want to be sad on Tuesday, so make sure you vote and tell your loved ones to vote. Yeah, vote, motherfuckers. Yeah.
Come on, people. Y'all know one person who hasn't voted. I've known people that are like that convinced their parents who are in their 70s to go out and vote for the first time this election. So please, for the love of God, convince somebody. If you've already voted, convince somebody that you love that's kind of on the fence about how to do things to like go out and actually do the right thing and vote. Please, 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 for the love of God, do it.
It's our responsibility to vote and help shape the government of our country. And if you don't do it, then it makes it a lot harder to complain, folks. That's just the fact. Senior producer of Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up
new
with
album.
Us all week long.
He's
on
got a
Facebook.
New album.
He has a new album. Check out his new album, which is getting rave reviews all over the place. Keep up with us all week long on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Discord. Links to all of those are in our show notes. If you love what we do, remember to hit those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and share us with all your friends. Thank you so much to the Max Fun members who make this show possible. Buy our t-shirt. We'll be back next week for even more. You guessed it, wrestling. Until then,
wrestling.
Remember to walk in love.
Dice and Bites Podcast. Dice and
like, as fine as maybe people feel like they need to do it because it's like we need a moment, I think what I enjoy more, hold on, let me let my dog shake off really quick.
Link,
calm down, pup. There you go. Like, while I get the need to do those kind of, get off my microphone, stop it. Stop it.
Link, what do you think about Hell in a Cell?
Hell, what do you feel about the Kennel from Hell match, huh, buddy?
Those dogs were pooping everywhere.
And mounting each other on the sideline.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.